Hi, I'm Davey. We have my co-host here, PJ, and a very special guest, Aisha from Pinterest, here to talk to us about being a design technologist. Hi, Aisha. How are you?
Good. Hi, welcome. Thank you for having me. I don't know why I said welcome, but you know, it's one of those days.
I always like to be welcome wherever I'm at, so there I appreciate it.
Yeah, exactly.
PJ, you are welcome. Thank you also for, you know, calling in.
Good to know that I'm welcome. Thanks.
So we're very excited to talk to you about the role of design technologists and this tapping back into your amazing presentation at Clarity. I think it's a very hot topic being in the design system space. How do we commingle design and engineering? And I think we've previously have seen a lot of organizations that are very split. Like we have designers that sort of work in our design space and our design tools with no cross-pollination. We have engineers working in their design tools with little to no collaboration. And that extends towards things like designers being gated in Figma and Sketch, engineers working within GitHub and no cross-collaboration. So wanted to talk to you a little bit about your journey at Pinterest and how you've gotten started as a design technologist.
Yeah, so I got really lucky in the beginning of my career to work with a recruiter who understood that I wanted to be in a much more creative visual space. So she introduced me to UX engineering when I told her that I didn't want to stop coding, but I wanted something earlier on in the product lifecycle and something that was more visual. And so since then, I've been working on design systems teams, which after a couple of companies has led me to Pinterest. And I wasn't actually looking to move when the recruiter from Pinterest reached out to me and sent me the most ideal job description. Like if I could write my dreams in a job description, this is the one she emailed me. And so I couldn't, you know, I couldn't ignore it. I couldn't say no. And so I responded. And I got a chance to meet PJ. I got a chance to talk with a lot of the team and really, really enjoyed everything that we talked about. And I think PJ and I, our first conversation went like 30 minutes over or something. Like we couldn't stop talking about design systems, which is always a good sign. And yeah, now I've been there almost a year and a half, working really closely with our designers and our engineers as a design technologist on our design system, Gestalt.
Yeah, how would you say is your split between working with design system practitioners in your team versus feature product designers at Pinterest?
Yeah, I think it's probably close to like a 60-40 split. So 60% of my time working with my direct design systems team and 40% of my time working with the other feature designers at Pinterest. A lot of that is through things like office hours and Slack channels. And, you know, with everyone remote, we rely on Slack a lot to get the everyday conversations done. And so anytime we're making updates to components or designers are coming up to us in office hours asking for requests, we work really closely with them to make sure that, you know, whatever we have planned or whatever we haven't accounted for is meeting the needs of the designers that we support, because at the end of the day, that's what our design systems team is. In our onboarding session, we talk about how our Gestalt team is not just a design system. It's really a service. Our whole team is working to help all of our designers and engineers at Pinterest to do their job better or more efficiently, easier, whatever it is that they need help with. Our goal is always to support that.
I think this is a question for both of y'all. So you mentioned, I think, the word prototyping. And I think from the Dizzy Streaming side, we did have a small UI development team that sort of started from the prototyping. And with the idea of prototyping being more, I would say, from the Dizzy Streaming side, it's very sizzle reel. It's very presentation. It is not necessarily from product designer's point of view, you can't see this, but steeped in reality is my quotations. So how have you shaken that notion of being a UI developer that worked on prototypes versus a design technologist that works on day-to-day real life production?
I think, at least from my end, a lot of it is interacting with people on a daily basis and really being there as soon as they have a question. So they know that, like you said, we're not doing these kind of nice to have prototypes that get thrown away a few weeks later after the demo is done, which is definitely how I started. But since then, I've definitely transitioned into much more day-to-day support for our designers and our engineers, constantly working with them on Slack and answering any questions that come up and encouraging them to do prototypes or helping them with prototypes that are built using the design system. So they're not seen as throwaway code. They're seen as, like, you know, a work in progress or a MVP that can be built upon and is not a waste of time. And I think anytime we can prove that the benefits of having those prototypes that we can send to research or we can test internally with multiple people and then be able to say, okay, well, here, engineers, like, this is, you know, 20% done to start with, and you can just build off of it, I think is always really powerful.
I may have a liberal interpretation of this, but I personally think everything's a prototype. We're in the world of software where anything can change. We're not making statues. And so even when you ship to production, that theoretically is a prototype for the next version that you ship for production. To me, the real value of a prototype mindset is you think you got a good idea and then you put it out in the world and it ain't. And you learn really quickly what you didn't know. And that has been a constant in my life of you have a real clear picture that's real wrong. And the best way to figure that out is to get it into the world and learn through the hard knocks. That's the approach I've taken daily. And it probably rubs off in terms of, hey, let's ship something, see how it works. Not too much commitment, but let's get it out there, figure out what's wrong, and then go from there, as opposed to trying to solve every single hypothetical problem in the world. So I personally take that mindset to everything that I do and just expect change to happen and expect to learn from that process and make it better the next time.
Especially thinking about prototypes being aspirational, coming from that lens, and with PJ expressing that software in theory is a prototype. Software evolves. Like, we're never done. Design systems are never done. How have you dealt in terms of engineers that were skeptical of UI engineers? And I think this really comes from there was a thought. It was a little bit of an eerie thought that I had, just from, like, the perception that would you be seen as a hero engineer, quotation marks here, that works on the design system team that is able to dictate how something might go? And how has that been handled from, like, the client engineering teams at Pinterest?
Yeah, I think that's one of the tricky things of being a design technologist, is that even personally, I find myself skeptical of my engineering skills every now and then, right? Like, I'll forget to do something or I'll mess something up on the engineering side and wonder, like, oh, I wonder if the front-end engineers are thinking differently of me now. I think part of it is remembering for myself and for everyone that works with me is that, you know, I won't know everything that is involved on the engineering side, especially more towards the back end or security or performance. Like, I bring a lot to the table on the other side of things, on the design side, that the front end engineers probably don't know about, or things like accessibility, which I've spent a lot of my career on. But I think as soon as I end up working with a lot of the front end engineers or client engineers, the light bulb goes off and they realize, right? Like, oh, this is what design technology is. But part of it is just that a lot of people have never heard that term, or UX engineer, or UI engineer, or creative technologist, whatever it's called at these various companies. It's still a very new term for a lot of people. And so I think getting a chance to work with those people and be in the same room at the end of that meeting or pairing session, whatever it might be, people have a much better understanding of what it is that I do. Even when I spoke at Clarity, there were so many people in the chat saying like, oh, I do this. This is what I do. I didn't know it had a name. I thought it was a disadvantage. A lot of people, I had never thought of that, but a lot of people in the chat then expressed that they thought knowing a little bit of engineering and a little bit of design and being able to work in the middle was a disadvantage because it wasn't fully one end of the spectrum or the other. And I think hopefully what I tried to convey during that was that it's not a disadvantage. It's a huge advantage to be able to talk to both sides, speak the language of both sides. And yeah, you might not know everything about performance, or you might not know how to do everything in Figma or Sketch, but you can be the person that bridges those conversations and those teams and ensures that, you know, we don't design this golden goose on one side and engineering gets to it and says, this is impossible. This is not something we can build. And so I think there's a lot of benefit of being in the middle. And so if people are skeptical, I think it dissipates pretty quickly once they get a chance, hopefully, to work with someone who is kind of in that middle ground and can help translate things or help them avoid pitfalls that they wouldn't have otherwise known about without working with someone in the design technology realm.
Also, for what it's worth, and this just might be my experience, but the work that we do, I would say 80% of it isn't rocket science. We don't need hyper specialization to accomplish it. It's, oh crap, we have to do this. We have to check this box. We have to get this thing done. Where it's just the rigmarole, the daily grind, where you don't need a rocket scientist or some design genius. You need someone that's capable to do it. And having someone that has that level of flexibility is amazing. And I was just making that case at work today, or yesterday, that, you know, when you have someone that can do the full gamut of work, that gives you a level of operational latitude that you just don't have if you have a bunch of specialists. If you have specialists, you have to line that up and sequence it. And if someone goes on vacation or someone gets sick or someone's working on something else, you're done. You just hit a brick wall. But if you have a team of utility players, I hate to use the sports metaphor, I know that's heresy in the design world, but if you have utility players, it gives you latitude. Now everyone's on deck to flex as necessary. That is unbelievably valuable and undervalued, in my opinion, within organizations. Just the thing that comes up that you weren't expecting that happens every single day, and you have no one to do it because you're already fully utilized, or the person that is specialized in that just can't, is out today or just can't do it.
Yeah, I think there's a really bad metaphor that we hear a lot in design systems conversations about bridging the gap. And it's one of those where we shouldn't necessarily bridge the gap. We should be crossing the same bridge together at the same time, you know, as partners. And I like to think of that as both a designer product relationship, a designer engineering relationship. In my experience, we usually have one primary partner. So I think luckily our primary partner as design systems teams are both designers from like the file point of view, but our output is directly in partnership with engineering. So as a design technologist on your group, how have you effectively partnered with the engineering teams? Like, what are some good routines that you've all been able to adapt there?
Yeah, I think one of my favorite parts is that a lot of times we have our feature engineering teams contribute back to the design system, right? So we don't try to gatekeep it in a way that we say, okay, only these three engineers are in our design system are able to make changes. If our feature engineers, our front-end engineers, have the bandwidth, we always encourage them to make any change that they need. Obviously, with our support and with our guidance, and we do peer reviews and all of that. And so it's definitely a very collaborative process. I think that helps a lot because people get a sense of ownership these little pieces of the design system, like they can point to something and be, I contributed that, right? I made that change. And then we also like to celebrate it in our newsletters and our updates, because, you know, the design system doesn't happen with just our small team. If no one else used it, then we would be a little bit pointless. And so we want to work as closely with the teams who are going to consume our components as possible. And I think whether they're contributing the actual pull request for a feature or whether they're just collaborating with us as we ourselves make the update, as many times as we can connect with them throughout the process, the better. And we answer a lot of, you know, Slack questions throughout the day too with our engineering teams. And I think it doesn't matter if they're on web or iOS or Android, whenever we can, we try to support them as best as possible. And I think that constant flow of communication back and forth, I mean, we ask them plenty of questions too, right? We need to know so much information about their world while we make our own changes, that as much as we can, we try to have an open line of communication that lets us be available, essentially. We are, like I said earlier, we act as a service to all of our engineering teams. So whenever we get that chance, whether it's through accessibility work that all of our feature teams are working on and there's something in the design system that we can improve to make their lives easier, we want to know that information too. And so I think as much as possible, it's a lot of communication, which can get overwhelming these days in Slack with everyone remote. I think in an office we'd be running around just as much, but I think it's a really nice way to get to know everyone too. I mean, there are people I work with all the time that I wouldn't otherwise have a reason to work with them unless I was working on the design system.
I think it's very exciting to have someone like yourself on a design team. And I think a lot of us listening, hopefully, are also looking to get buy-in ourselves to get a design technologist like yourself. In the meantime, I think a lot of also designers are trying to up-level themselves from like a learning perspective to not only learn about what the different constraints for designing on web or iOS or living room platforms on our end, but then what are also better ways for us to be empathetic towards engineering problems. So what would you suggest for designers either on your team or out there listening in the world that want to learn more about front end?
Yeah, I think that's a fantastic question. And it's one that I get a lot too from people I work with or people who just reach out. I think a lot of it is, like you said, it's empathy, right? And so the best way, I think, to build the empathy for your engineers that are eventually going to work on the things that you've designed is to try to build it yourself in some way, right? It doesn't have to be in work. It can be like trying to design and build your own personal website or a game or whatever it is. I think anytime, I mean, this is how I learned a lot of this stuff too. Anytime you can actually put yourself in those shoes and go about building it and test it out and, you know, try to get something from being kind of like the 2D sketch to the 3D prototype type world, I think it's eye-opening. Even if you don't get far, right? That's eye-opening in itself. Like every hurdle is a learning moment. And it's a moment where you build empathy for people who work differently than you do. And so, you know, taking whatever current project you're sketching out in Figma, even trying to build the Figma prototype first, right? Start there, try to make it interactive. Think about how, put yourself in the mindset that your engineer would too, right? If they are looking at static screens, their first question is usually, okay, how do I get from this screen to this screen, right? And so starting to build that out as a Figma prototype, but then pulling up something like a code sandbox. We have a code sandbox that has our whole design system preloaded into it, right? And so theoretically, any designer could open that up and try to build a sign up flow. Try to just build the form first with the components and see what it's like. I, as an accessibility advocate, will always ask designers as well to try to turn on the screen reader, go with through it with a keyboard, figure out how that works from an accessibility point of view too, because that's a whole nother level of empathy to build. But I think as much as possible, I think any designer looking to, you know, either become a design technologist or just get more familiar with the other side of things, as much as you can, trying to build it out yourself, test it out yourself, prototype, whatever it is. It's not, it doesn't have to be perfect. It's not going to be perfect. I learn things all the time as I'm building. And I think I'm a very hands-on person, so I can read about something for ages, but it will not connect, right? The dots will not connect until I'm doing it hands-on and actually trying it out, like implementing design tokens. I've read articles and articles of it. And then recently I've gone to actually build out the architecture, and it's a very different experience, but now I feel a lot more confident with it. And so I think, yeah, as a designer, you can read the articles, you can get the books on JavaScript 101, whatever it is. But until you really try to get hands-on with it, I think you'll have that light bulb moment. That'll be the moment where you go, oh, this is what it's like. Or, wow, this is harder than I thought. Or this is easier than I thought. It's totally up for grabs.
Ideally, I would love for designers to be expected to understand the implications of their designs. From a maintenance standpoint, from just the initial investment to build. You think of like people who design cars. They're not going to go and design something that can't actually get manufactured, right? There has to be an understanding of like, yo, this thing needs to get built. This thing needs to run for at least 100,000 miles. That's just a part of the design process. And somehow that seems to be less the case in software. And to me, that's one of the most important things to design. Can you actually make the thing? And is it cost effective? Are you in the black at the end of the day? So this feature that you designed netted $1 million, but it cost $5 million to build. Doesn't seem like it's good design, at least from a business outcome standpoint. So how do you even do that? You can either talk to engineers, which is completely fair, or if you can start to understand some of the patterns about how to design for implementation, some of the bugaboos, some of the gotchas, it's going to lead to much happier engineers in the short term and the long term. And I personally believe just a better product altogether. But until there's those expectations, things are going to be a slow road to get there.
I think also one of the things I've loved doing in the past, it was a little bit easier in person, but it's totally doable in our remote world, was pairing sessions. Anytime I had a designer come pop over my shoulder and watch me fiddle with a prototype or a design, I'll open up the dev tools in Chrome and Inspector and make some changes. And you just see their eyes like grow 10 sizes. Probably 20 to 30 times I've had people go, I didn't know you could do this. Like, I didn't know if I wanted to look at a website and see what would happen if this font size was 8 pixels larger, that I could just do that, right? On any site that's out there in the world. And so I think any chance I get, I love pairing with designers. And I wish that was a more common practice, like you said, PJ, for a designer on a feature team to partner with the engineer on their feature team that's implementing the work and just watch over their shoulder of what they're doing and how their iteration cycle goes and what they do to test and what they run into, you know, the questions they have. Because I think doing all these things in silos benefits no one. And the more we could actually be either virtually or physically in the same room while we work through these things, the better. Because I've had so much success with designers just watching me code something that they had put together and put it into a prototype or whatnot. Because they, like I said, they have this light bulb moment of, oh, this is what it's like to actually try to implement this. So even if before you try to build it yourself, right, and you get into the weeds of that, just sit with someone who is already comfortable building it and kind of just shadow them
Yeah, I love the CodePen approach. We don't have our own in-house solution, so CodePen will do.
Yeah.
But I think getting designers comfortable in uncomfortable situations or different workspaces, I think, is extremely important. And I think from our design systems point of view, that touches on design tokens and understanding how that works. Obviously, we could read Medium articles till we're blue in the face, but really opening a JSON file and manipulating that and then understanding how tokens can link to each other, that's been an eye-opening experience. And I think that as we sort of socialize that to the larger design team, I think it sort of builds empathy in terms of design token management and simplifying our branding overall. So that's always been a very exciting part that I'm very enthused about getting into and working with our engineers on. In terms of a growth goal that you had for yourself, what is one that you are looking to improve upon for the next half?
I think for myself, I'd love to get even further into the design side of things. I don't typically work in Figma. I reference Figma files a lot, obviously, for the things that I'm going to build for the design system or the changes I'm going to make. But I'm not typically the one starting with a blank sheet in Figma and building out something. And so recently I've had a little bit of more experience of figuring out how to do Figma. But I think that's definitely one area where I would love to dive into more and get a lot more comfortable just knowing, you know, how to reference things or how to update things. And I think same way, right? I want to build more empathy on that side. And I know Figma is a loved and hated tool at times, and I want to better understand why. And I also really want to learn more about the Figma prototyping side of things. I've been on the receiving end of a lot of Figma prototypes, but I haven't really been on the building side of things. And personally, it's probably because I started out in prototyping, but it's one of my absolute favorite things to do. And it's something that I want to help our designers get more comfortable with. And so I think knowing where Figma prototyping or whatever design tool prototyping, where it's easy, but also where it's sticky would be helpful for me, because wherever that's sticky, I want to see if I can create something better or something that makes it a little bit easier. So whether that's, you know, having frames in a code sandbox that our designers can start with as a boilerplate to do some more prototyping with our actual interactive components versus the static versions on Figma. I can't answer those questions until I have more empathy on that side of things and I've gone through it myself. So I think that's definitely something I want to focus on in the next half, getting a lot better and a lot more familiar. You know, I'll go prototype a personal website for myself or something. I'll do it on the other end. And I'm hoping that'll give me more insight into what our designers go through on a day-to-day basis.
That's the tough thing about design, the design technologist trade. As I've had people say, so what are the skills of a design technologist? And all I can say is, well, it depends. It's a spectrum, right?
Yeah.
And you have some people that are, their emphasis is on engineering with, you know, a toe dip in design, vice versa, and then someone's straight in the middle. So how the hell do you define a role that could be literally anywhere on an extremely broad spectrum? It's difficult and it's ambiguous, and you just got to be okay with that, you know, and just figure out how much definition do you need to keep the lights on and then let people flex as they'd like to. Because I think the value that they bring far outweighs the ambiguity it can bring to an org chart at times, which is always a challenge.
Yeah, I love that perspective on it. And there's definitely, I think, on from the Disney streaming side, there's sort of two flavors of this design technologist that I could see being successful for us. One is the capital D design and engineer, vampire werewolf combo, where the designer works in Figma, but is able to understand the output and is then pushing out to GitHub. Vice versa, we would work with a design technologist on the engineering side, which would be a capital E engineer with design, which I think is working more on the code end and then less familiar on the Figma side. So I see both ends. We're interested in both. We're looking to expand that role on our team, but these are the sort of, I think, prior to talking to you, a lot of questions in my mind, and we appreciate you taking the time here to talk to us. It's been 30 great minutes of conversation. So thank you so much for stopping by, Aisha.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.